Welcome, Action fans, and thanks for joining us for this special edition of All 90s Action All the Time, where we look at the best and worst of Kurt Russell's 90s output in our Kurt Russell's Awards. I'm one of your hosts, Scott Murphy, and alongside me to talk all things Kurt Russell, it's my regular co-host. You know who I'm talking about. He's one third of the Bloodhound Picks podcast. He's a screenwriter, and he is a man who knows how to rock a mullet. It's Mr. Craig Draheim.
Glad to be back.
Talking more Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, before I announce what the categories are that we're going to be covering in the Kurt Russell Awards, it's been a pretty fun season, eh?
It has, yeah. This is the third season. It's been definitely the strongest of the three in terms of consistency, and probably in terms of the films as well, I'd say. And yeah, I actually enjoyed this. Even the one I think I did not watch all of them before going into this, but yeah, I think I was pleasantly surprised even with the ones I hadn't seen, and even if with the ones that I kind of went in not as happy about, I still kind of came out going, well, you know, I might watch it again. It was decent enough.
Which ones did you go into not as happy about?
I know. So Soldier was the one where I had the nostalgia for.
Yeah.
But then I know we've talked about during the episode and then even off air of going, well, if it was on again, I'd watch it. But there wasn't one that I would say like Cop or like, I'd watch Copland all the time, but like Stop Where My Mom Will Shoot.
Yeah.
Specialist, like what we've talked about with Stallone, where like I never want to see that thing again.
So yeah, there's definitely no film this season that was like Stop Where My Mom Will Shoot or The Patriot or something like that, you know, where you're just like, yeah, well, we got to cover it, man. We just got to suck it up.
Take the shot. And then
that's the rules of the podcast, man. Yeah. We cover all the 90s action films, even if you're real bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this one was good, you know, like, and yeah, it's pretty consistent. You know, there's a couple of weaker ones in there, and, you know, we'll get into that when obviously one of the categories is worst film. Across the board, a pretty strong season, mm-hmm. and maybe one of the strongest seasons we'll do. Who knows?
Yeah.
So I better announce what the categories actually are. So the categories we're going to be looking at today are best film, worst film, best villain, worst villain, best Kurt Russell performance, worst Kurt Russell performance, and the last award is a bit of a joke award. Sometimes we want to throw one of them in. It is best hair stroke facial hair stroke both, because if Kurt Russell is Kurt Russell is known for many things, but one of the main things that he is known for is all the glorious hairstyles and facial hair he has had over the years in many different films. So we want to talk a little bit about that as well. And we will be tackling those awards in reverse. So we're going to go joke award first, and then we will end on best film, because that makes sense to do the ordering that way. so we'll just dive straight into it, and we'll go for that award first. Okay. Best hair, stroke facial hair, stroke both. So first of all, before you announce your winner in this category, did you go for hair, facial hair, or both?
I probably went for the easiest one. I did.
And you did both.
It's because it's a established look, this one, my choice, that has influenced the creation of other characters and just been a big kind of influence in maybe costumes and stuff like that. So It was probably an easier choice than I should have picked going through it, but I was like, I have to do it. So that is mine. I choose both.
You choose both.
Yeah.
And so what is your winner?
It is Snake Plissken in Escape from LA.
Yeah. Yeah, I went the same way.
Yeah,
because I was like thinking about it. And I was like, there's other ones. He's looking pretty cool, and he's got a glorious mustache in Tombstone. I put like Wyatt Earp as like my runner up and stuff like that. But yeah, it's such an iconic look, and he's he's rocking that mullet, and he's got that 5 o'clock shadow and that You can't beat it.
Yeah, it's the perfect 5 o'clock shadow.
He did. Oh, it is. Yeah. It's so good. I recently rewatched Escape from New York as well, and I was just like, Snake Plissken is a glorious, glorious character.
Yeah, if only there was more. I'm surprised that is one. Well, he might be too old for it now.
Yeah, he's like 70.
Yeah, that is one of those where I thought, because you're having like either the Rocky kind of sequel reboots or things like that, or there has been talk for many years about the final installment of Conan, which I still hope happens of him as an old man. But that's one where like I wonder if they've ever kind of planned that of like potentially having Snake Plissken at least return one last time as an older man. But I'm assuming not. But
I don't think, as far as from what I've heard, like, I'm not sure that he's all that interested. Okay. Like, I mean, I reading up on Escape from L.A. when we did the Escape from L.A. Mm-hmm. episode, Kurt Russell clearly loves the character. And, as we talked in the Escape from L.A. episode, I know you weren't on it, but, you rewatched it as well. And you will have seen that it was co-written by Kurt Russell, which is his only writing credit. So, he loves the character and all that. But as far as what I've heard, he's not all that interested in doing, that kind of action man role. Because... apparently he turned down a role in The Expendables because he kind of thought, I think he kind of thinks that whole, thing that, that gets called Jerry Action is kind of ridiculous. Yeah. And I think he still likes being in action movies. Like he's like the Mr. Nobody character in the later Fast and the Furious films.
Yeah.
But I think he's more comfortable doing something like that. It's like a kind of cool supporting character who does a little bit of action, but it isn't like the main kind of action lead,
Yeah.
I don't think he wants to be in that kind of sly Liam Neeson, all that kind of older guys like kicking ass, throwing guys half their age or around even less than half their age around, as if they're nothing, whatever. I don't think he really buys into that. And
to be honest, And to be honest, I think that will hold up better on his career when, kind of in retrospect of that, he kind of, that was one part of his career. Here was another, and he was always kind of moving forward instead of this element of, just trying to constantly recapture the moment of the success by just provide, trying to repeat the formula or whatever it may be.
Yeah, again, from what I've read about his character, and you can only know so much from what you read on the internet, I know nothing about Kurt Russell, the man, apart from, articles I've read from him, interviews I've seen with him. That's, and obviously the kind of persona you create in public is not always, your private self or whatever. But it does seem like he's a guy who doesn't really look back much. And I think that's part of the main reason, as well as kind of seeing it as ludicrous, I think that's also part of the main reason of him turning down the likes of The Expendables, because it's like built on nostalgia. And I don't think he really wants to be part of that. He doesn't want to be part of the nostalgia cycle. He just wants to kind of move forward, continue with his career, and I think, maybe because he wasn't, always that massive star in the way of the Slys and the Arnies and all that. Yeah, and I think he just views himself as just like a working actor, because that is what he's been since he was a kid. In he started in the 60s, he's been acting for a fucking long time, and then he just sees himself as a working actor, and he just rolls, and it's not about that.
Yeah.
So I I'm guessing we won't get more Snake, but I'm guessing we won't get old Snake Plissken.
Yeah.
It's a very long way to say that.
Yeah. Well, there's the remake that will or will not come out by Lee Whannell, but that he's supposed to be working on, of Escape from New York. But
yeah, I wonder who they'll get in to do that.
Yeah,
I'm not sure who would be best to do that. To be honest,
I'm assuming that it'll probably be one of those where they try and modernize it and then change where it's, the character of Snake Plissken won't be. He won't try and just make a Snake Plissken rebooted character. I'm guessing, because it's Kurt Russell's performance in that is so iconic that it's like if you tried that, you're in a lose-lose situation.
Yeah, you're pretty much going to fall flat on your face there. Yeah, I think you just can't, you know, like, I'm sure we'll talk more about Escape from LA, but
yeah,
even in that movie, which is not an amazing movie, you know, it has some pretty big flaws.
Yes,
like Snake Plissken and Kurt Russell are still cool as, and still, you know, like eminently watchable. Like, you know, I'm not saying that Escape from LA is a terrible movie, because I don't think it is, but even if it was a terrible movie, I still think Kurt Russell's performance as Snake Plissken would make it watchable, even if it was a much worse movie.
Agreed.
So we'll kind of mosey along to our next award, which is Worst Kurt Russell Performance, which is the award that I struggled on the most, because I thought that Kurt Russell was consistently pretty badass across the season.
Yeah. Now, this one for me, my pick, I almost chose, I think, based more on screen time and flaws within the script that we talked about in the episode than I did actually his performance being poor. It seemed more of a directorial issue instead of that. But that was, yeah, I struggled as well.
Yeah. Okay. So tell us what your pick is.
Mine is actually going to be Stargate, and that is because it was kind of James Spader's movie. It wasn't fully Kurt Russell. He didn't really have or didn't become more of a major character until about halfway through. And then because of the script, again, which we talked about in the episode, and some of the directing elements, it kind of didn't know how to handle him with the element of, like, he's mourning the fact that his child accidentally killed himself with one of Kurt Russell's own weapons, and he's kind of, but then he's also jokey at times, like that, you know, the movie itself was trying not knowing of where it wanted to place itself in terms of its tone, and that affected the character more than I'd say his performance of it, and the fact that he just wasn't involved as much as a main character as some of the other ones. That's kind of why I chose it. So more on technicality than I think.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I suppose I was thinking about this. I was thinking, like, some people, you know, like really like his performance as Sergeant Todd and Soldier. And I get where he's going with the performance. And like, I didn't really want to, I wasn't the most compelling performance for me, but like, I get where he's going with it. And the fact that he worked so hard on it. Like, I know that he, like, doing the research, I know he worked so hard and he trained for 18 months and, you know, like, and obviously he was doing this thing and to make it all come through the eyes, you know, like, and I think it just about worked. I'm not sure it fully works. I'm not sure it's the most compelling thing, but yeah, like, he's still pretty cool in that, actually. And so I think I am also going to go. The other one I thought about as well was Executive Decision.
Yes.
I was thinking, like, again, you know, it's just like a performance. It's just kind of like, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
He's doing a kind of Jack Ryan-ish thing. And it's not great. It's not terrible. It's just fine, you know, like, and I you know, as we discussed in that episode, kind of everything in that movie is fine. Yeah. It's, you know, like,
we should have had a award for the It's Fine award. The executive's decision would just take it.
Executive decision. Yes. The most middle of the road action movie of the 90s is all. The most hard-stamped 3-star film of the 90s. Yeah. Executive decision. Everything in that movie, maybe some elements don't quite work so much, but nearly everything in that movie is just like, it works. It works. Yeah. You know, the script's all right. The action's all right. Yeah. The performances are all right. But, it gives you what you want. You know, if you stick this on a Friday night, you will not be upset. Yeah. You won't be thrilled. You probably won't remember it on Monday, but it's all right. Yeah. It's perfectly fine. Everything in it is perfectly fine.
And it even balances itself out. So those moments that aren't completely great, it's like, okay, well, you have these little moments here that are a little bit above, you know, just fine, to kind of then take those not so great moments and just make it all even turn it back to normal.
Yeah, that is true. And it is definitely one of those, because I happen to have a Steven Seagal box set that has that in it.
Okay.
I have seen Executive Decision, and I've watched that box set a couple of times. I have seen Executive Decision a few times, probably a few more times than most people. But it definitely is one of those movies that I think definitely if you've seen it just the once, or, you know, like, you probably won't remember much about it. In fact, the main thing that you probably will remember about it is Steven Seagal's death. Like, if you remember anything from that movie, it will be Steven Seagal's death is my gamble. You know, it's my bet. But no, I am also going to go cut back to the worst performance. Went on a Executive Decision detour there. But I'm not going for Dr. David Grant from Executive Decision. I am going to go for Colonel Jack O'Neill in Stargate. And like you say, it's not because Kurt Russell's performance is bad, it's just because the writing of the character is weird. And, you know, there is points in the movie where he's a quippy action hero. There is points in the movie where he is a grieving dad. There's points in the movie where he's this kind of straight up badass, you know, like, it just doesn't, there's no through line to the character. You're just kind of like, I'm not really sure what this character is. And at least while, again, the Dr. David Grant character, it might not elevate itself to anything amazing, at least there is a kind of consistent through line of like, oh, this guy is supposed to be like this analyst guy who kind of, and he has like a natural arc as well of like, you know, he's wearing glasses and, you know, and that obviously means he's a geek because he's in the 90s. And then, you know, like, he becomes an action hero after being effectively bullied into action by Steven Seagal's character, who is such a dick in the movie, as we discussed in the Executive Decision episode. So he has a natural arc as well, but like, you don't have like a natural arc for the O'Neill character. It's kind of all over the map, and then you have this kind of replacement father-son relationship that he has on the alien planet, and you're like, that kind of feels like something, but it doesn't, there's no real emotional core there. I don't know if I'm really invested in this. And like you say, it's almost a technicality. It's not a terrible performance. It's just not a brilliantly written character. And probably of all the films that we've watched this season, it probably is the weakest performance because.
Yeah.
So on the flip side of the coin, now we go to best Kurt Russell performance. Yes. So, Craig, what did you go for best Kurt Russell performance?
So for those that listen to our breakdown episode, I just spoiled it. it is going to be breakdown. I went, but in the episode itself, mm-hmm. Because this is it was watching this breakdown for the podcast was almost like watching it for the first time, because I know I saw it when it probably first came out, but I couldn't remember a single thing except maybe the final truck bit, like the very last 30 seconds. But yeah, this was, I was surprised. I went in thinking like Tombstone was going to take the cake for like all the best awards. And no, I think his performance works really well. I think there's that scene where he's watching, you know, from the kind of rafters in the barn, and they're pulling out his wife, and they're talking about how she's dead because she's wrapped up in this blanket and she's not moving, and he can't really do anything. And you can kind of see the fear that's been building up in him throughout that whole thing. And all you really see are his eyes, and they're just like swelling up. I mean, you know, he has very powerful moments that I think are highlighted over, you know, other parts in the, even with something like Tombstone, it was so, I think, melodramatic with how he dealt with it, that breakdown was kind of him taking that emotion and being able to make it more subtle, which kind of showed a strength. So I actually am going to go with breakdown.
Yeah. Well, it seems like we're on the same track.
We didn't think we were. We thought we were going to have variation.
We thought we were going to have variations. Previously, in other awards, if you listen back to the Patriot episode that had the Seagal end of season awards, we picked differently. And yes, we picked a bit differently in the Stallone awards last season. But so far, you know, there's still awards to go. There could be variations. There could be variations, not very many, but like there could definitely be variations coming up, because we have not discussed the awards before the podcast recording. So you'll get none of that kind of, as we were discussing earlier, chat that you sometimes get that's probably annoying you, listener. You'd be like, fucking just tell us now. Don't speak about it and then, you know, tell us that you were speaking about that. Just tell us in the moment, you know. Okay, we hear you. We hear you. Anyway, best performance. Yes, I am also going for the character of Jeff Taylor in Breakdown, because I think it's the most fully rounded performance. I think you kind of get all of Kurt Russell. He's charming and funny in the opening scenes where he's like bantering with his wife. He's, you know, badass at the end. In the very, very end, it becomes, you know, not a total action hero, but, you know, definitely more of an action hero. So you get the badass bit there. And then you get like, you get the emotion as well, you know, like you say, particularly that moment in the barn where he catches eyes with with his wife, you know, after thinking she was dead, you know, like, you kind of get a bit of everything. And, it's such a well-crafted performance. It's such a fully rounded performance that, I definitely have to give the award to it. The other ones that I did want to mention were, Wyatt Earp was probably my runner up. But I also really like his performance as Stephen McCafferty in Backdraft. I think that's a cool performance as well. And it has like the kind of audience rousing moment of the Hugo Weagle line, I think it, you know, and his chemistry with William Baldwin is really good. They really do come across as being like brothers. So I think that performance is really cool as well, and really stands out in my mind. And you know, I liked that film as a kid as well, so I have some nostalgia there too. Those are the performances that really stick in my mind that I really was a big fan of. And I shall say as well that his performance is Wyatt Earp. That is probably the character that probably gets the best lines of any characters that we've come across in this season, like particularly his line about you going to do something, or you're just going to stand there and bleed, that he says to the Billy Bob Thornton character.
Yeah.
And of course, the marvelous professional wrestling style thing that he shouts at the guy, where he's like, you tell him I'm coming, hell's coming with me, you hear? Yeah. Hell's coming with me. Yeah.
Well, he even has the walk across water shooting, he's just going, no.
Oh, yeah.
No. And I know in previous episode, maybe we discussed this too, where I feel like maybe Wyatt, his performance in Wyatt Earp might have made or been highlighted more, but he was up against, you know, Val Kilmer as Doc Holliday. He was up against so many other incredible performances that even his going so over the top, it kind of, it was diminished by, you know, Ringo and Doc Holliday and the slew of others that were in that movie.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's very true. I think, like, it would probably stand out. Like, it is a great performance. His performance as Wyatt Earp is a great performance. Great. And it does have some great lines. But, yeah, it's just, like, it's not Doc Holliday, you know. It's not Johnny Ringo. You know, like, even some of the other characters, like, I don't even think he's the coolest Earp brother. I think Sam Elliott's the coolest Earp brother.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, I think it would seem like kind of overacting in another movie, but the fact that he's up against Doc Holliday and Johnny Ringo and like Powers Booth character Curly Bill, like it doesn't seem like overacting at all. It almost seems like underacting because like they're chewing the scenery so hard.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
That is like one of the, you know, from our Stallone season compare, and Kurt Russell and you know, as Wyatt Earp isn't even like that, but everybody, he's cranked up to what we'd believe is a 10, and everybody is cranked up to like 25 or something.
Yeah, they're obviously all having a lot of fun, you know? Apart from, like, it's kind of weird, though, because, like, on that movie as well, you know, like, everybody's, like, way cranked up, but then, you know, there's the odd character, like, you know, I think if you'd only seen that movie once, you'd probably forget Bill Paxton's in the movie.
Yes.
And I love Bill Paxton. I love me some Bill Paxton. But, like, his character is so inconsequential. Even though his death is supposed to be really consequential, it feels really inconsequential.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know, like, I feel sorry for Bill Paxton in that movie. He doesn't get anything to do.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. And even like when you can say that one of the most subtle performances is Billy Zane, you're saying something.
Yeah, Billy Zane doesn't seem all that over the top. I mean, he is over the top, just not in this. Like, he is over the top in the movie. It just doesn't seem like it because of those around him.
Yes, and that's not a Billy Zane. I actually really like Billy Zane too.
Oh no, I've got nothing for love for Billy Zane. I like Billy Zane as well. I recently watched Orlando for the first time.
Okay,
I don't know if you've seen that movie. He makes a fun cameo in that.
Really.
Yeah.
I don't think I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's based on the Virginia Woolf movie. The famous film director, Virginia Woolf. No, it's based on the Virginia Woolf novel.
Yes.
And was directed by Sally Potter. Came out in the early 90s. It stars Tilda Swinton. It's really good. I'd recommend it. Not an action movie at all. Probably something we shouldn't talk about. But like, it did come out in the 90s. But not an action movie at all. But a good movie.
Yes. I'll check it out.
All right. So I feel like we're maybe going to be talking more Tombstone in a second. Yes. So best villain.
Oh, Best. Do we gotta do worst villain first?
Oh, that's right. I skipped ahead. I got overexcited.
Yes.
We're gonna do worst villain first. So we're gonna reel it back in. We're gonna do a rewind a little bit. Worst villain, Craig.
Okay. So I know I kind of discussed my having trouble with this one. This was kind of one of my tougher ones as well, because he wasn't, so Jason Isaac in Soldier wasn't given a lot, but I think the stuff he was given, he's one of the biggest highlights of that movie. So I couldn't do that one. So I end up going with Cuervo Jones, and I know you discussed another one, but then it kind of went with the, it just fell under the radar and I forgot about it because it was the It's Fine category.
But, so I wonder what doing, film yeah. he could be talking about.
So I did Cuervo Jones just because it was just, it's one of those ones that was kind of there. I was watching it, you know, for Snake Plissken, and he didn't really have the gravitas of, you know, like Isaac Hayes from Escape from New York or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, he was still okay, but it was just like a, it's fine. It's just there.
Yep. So this is the first award that we're going to go in different directions.
Yes.
Only slightly different directions, because my runner up was Cuervo Jones. And like you say, Cuervo Jones, not a terrible villain. You know, like Escape from LA kind of has two villains, because it's got Cliff Robertson's president character and it's got Cuervo Jones. Cliff Robertson's president character actually does make somewhat of an impression, even though he also doesn't have that much screen time. I think just because he's like that kind of religious right character, he just kind of gets under your skin more of like, fuck this guy.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's just me showing my political leanings there. Sorry to any right-wing listeners that we may have. It seems unlikely, but just in case, apologies. But anyway, yeah, Cuervo Jones wasn't great. He's clearly patented after Che Guevara, and
yes.
Very loosely, obviously, but anyway, it's not, you know, you've seen a lot of kind of Che Guevara like characters, and he's not one of the highlights of that type of character. And also, it's a bit weird because he's clearly a Latino character, and the actor playing him, George Corifis, as we discuss in the Escape from LA episode, is French Greek. So like, just, it's kind of weird on that level as well. Yeah, he just doesn't leave much of an impression. Like, his weird car with all the baby doll heads stuck to the bonnet makes more of an impression than the character himself.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I remember more about his car than his character or any of his lines that he said. Like, because the car has like a glitter ball at the back, like a disco ball at the back of the car. And yes, it's decorated on the bonnet and across the windshield with baby doll heads, you know, like, which is weird. I don't want to, like, that is a choice. That is definitely a design choice. an interesting one. I don't know where the fuck that would have come from. But yes, that's the thing I remember most about his character. His weird fucking car.
Yeah.
But that's just my runner-up. So my winner was Naji Hassan, who was the villain in It's Fine, Executive Decision. And I went for the character because maybe I was more disappointed because... I know David Sushi's a good actor. Like, he's good as Poirot. My mum's a big murder mystery fan, so I've seen all the Poirots. And yeah, he's good at that character. I've seen him in other stuff. He's a good actor, you know, like, but he's really not given much to do. He doesn't make much impact. I suppose, again, maybe it's a comparison thing. Like, so on one level, I'm disappointed that I know this guy's a good actor and he's not getting much. On the other level, I'm kind of disappointed because executive decision lives in that kind of Die Hard knockoff realm. So then you kind of compare them to the villains of every other Die Hard and Die Hard knockoff. And like in the pantheon of those villains, he's very low down. And also the third element as well is that him and his old gang kind of lean kind of heavily in towards a kind of Islamophobic trope.
Yep.
And so those three elements together made him my worst villain of this season.
Yes. Which I would, yeah, no, I would agree completely. Again, for me, it was just like that whole movie of executive decision besides Seagal's death. It basically left me completely any of the
like, it just didn't leave any impact on you at all. I feel like when I brought it up pre-record, you were like, oh yeah, I watched Executive Decision.
Yeah, that's how I felt, like, especially going through all the awards. It's like there's one more. What was it? There was something, I know.
What you don't know, listener, is like I message Craig on Twitter every week just to be like, you have seen Executive Decision. And they all right. How about, yeah, we covered it on the podcast. Okay.
Yeah. I guess we did. There's physical evidence, so yeah.
Here is me talking about it. I'm listening to myself now talking about it. I cannot remember doing this or watching the movie, but I suppose I did.
Did you happen to find somebody that just did an impression of me for that episode?
Yeah, I just hired a guy. I've just been fooling you into thinking you've seen Executive Decision and that you recorded that episode.
Yeah, that's my next horror movie script. Everybody convincing me I've seen Executive Decision and feeling like I haven't.
Feel like, nah, that doesn't feel right at all.
Yeah.
Okay, so now I'm not jumping ahead. I've got it in the right order now. Okay. So now we are actually going across to best villain.
Okay. So this is where, yeah, for me, I mean, it kind of was the more obvious choice. I did consider the villains in Breakdown, but I eventually, just because it's such an iconic role, I ended up choosing Johnny Ringo from Tomb Raider. Yeah, it's just he's it's hard. I did go back and forth a lot because it is one where a good portion of the movie he's not. The opening, Powers Booth is kind of seen as the main villain, and then Johnny Ringo's just not really there at all until after the OK Corral, where he's drunk and upset, and then he is there for a bit. I don't know. So that, as we talked about in that episode, there were some issues with the villains and who actually was the kind of main.
Yeah, antagonist. Because like Curly Bill is presented as the main villain at the start of the movie, and then there is a part of the movie near, and then Johnny Ringo assumes control after Curly Bill is killed, but there is a part near the end of the movie where it's kind of implied that Sheriff Johnny Behan, played by John Tenney, is kind of been the coordinator of this, so he's technically the main villain, kind of, sort of, even though not.
Well, then there's also, you know, the main kind of antagonist who's not even in charge, the one that just they see a lot, is Stephen Lang. Like
Ike.
More than any of them, but yet he's not really, he's just kind of like the one of their subordinates, but he's the one that seems to always be causing trouble, yet he's not the main threat. I don't know. There's a lot of issue with who's the antagonist in that.
Yeah, that's true. That's, you will be unsurprised to learn I went the exact same path. So my runner-up is Warren Redbar from Breakdown, played by the great, late great J.T. Walsh in the last movie that came out in his lifetime. And he's just so fucking evil.
He is.
Just, he plays it, yeah, like, he's just really chilling in the role. And as we discussed in the breakdown episode, like, what it's weird, you know, because it seems like such an innocuous moment, but one of the most chilling moments in the whole movie is, like, he just gives, like, a really sleazy description of Kurt Russell's wife in the movie. And it sends shivers down your spine. Yeah. And, like, yeah, it's a really effective performance. And in terms of, like, just a villain that really just gives you the creeps and, you know, like, makes you tense every time he's on the screen, then he is definitely the winner. In terms of pure fun, Johnny Ringo takes it. So yes, Johnny Ringo is my best villain because, like, the crazy look in Michael Biehn's eye is just so entertaining. It's just like, he seems so unhinged. He looks like he has taken all of the drugs and is just about to explode. And it's so compelling and entertaining to watch.
It is. Yeah, it really is. But I will say with J.T. Walsh that, and what is so brilliant about it too is that here you have kind of this thriller and then an action movie, but he goes to levels of evil in it that would almost fit in kind of the horror movie version of, you know, that whole getting lost in the desert and dealing with the local thing, the locals.
Yes, it does border on a kind of more horror villain for sure. Than your typical action villain. I would say, there's a greater depth to that character and there's a greater chill factor to that character. And I don't mean like chill as in like, cool dude. I mean really chilling. And, that's an interesting film because, like, it plays on these kind of different things, and I think that's why it kind of feels like it's kind of part Duel, but it's also like part, but it also feels like those kind of horror films that are in similar territories, you know, like things like The Vanishing and like things like The Hitcher, and which are clearly much more horror movies, and. There's a ferocity to that character that you don't normally get in an action movie that is more common to a horror movie villain.
But with our pick, Johnny Ringo, for the fun element.
Yeah, for the fun, for the mustache twirling, for the crazy eyes, for the pistol whirling, you know, like, as we discussed in the Tombstone episode, you know, that's absolutely my favorite scene in the movie. The pistol whirling and the cup whirling and the Latin off, everything about that scene is delicious.
Yes.
I mean, literally, if that had gone on longer, like if most of the movie was just Doc Holliday and Johnny Ringo talking shit about each other, I would still watch it.
Yeah. You want to make like a My Dinner with Andre, but with Doc Holliday and just Ringo.
Yes. Absolutely. dear. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
So we've now done that one. And this time I'll get everything in order again. I won't skip ahead. I won't just jump on to the best. I just want to talk about the best, obviously.
Yeah.
We got to talk about the worst as well.
Yes.
So now we move on to worst film.
Okay. My worst, and I think we kind of, in the episode we hinted at it, and we kind of have, I think already, is a film that isn't necessarily that bad. I think if it was on again, I'd watch it. And there are the opening and the actual fight scenes are great. It's just the middle is such a drag in terms of whatever it's trying to do, which is soldier.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, as we kind of discussed in the episode, every time Soldier is being a trashy B-movie, it works. Every time it tries to be semi-serious or give anything some sort of dramatic heft, it does not work.
No.
So, you know, as you may have guessed, listener, again, Craig and I agree. I suppose the closest film to this in terms of the worst is probably Escape from LA.
Yep.
Which has its problems, but is still largely entertaining. You know, we've talked about the weakness of one of the villains, as we talked about in the episode. If you've listened to the last episode, listener, it has some of the worst CGI you will see ever in any movie. and yeah, it's like it's tonally a bit weird, and there's a bunch of issues, but it still kind of holds together, and it's still an entertaining watch.
It's fun for the most part,
and like as much as and you can. You can listen to more of the flaws that I found in it in the episode. But like you say, kind of campy fun, and it kind of sprints along, you know, and its runtime goes by very quickly.
Yes.
Whereas What Lets Soldier Down, and like it's just, you know, it's the consistency is more than anything. I mean, again, even if it was more consistent, it'd be a relatively trashy throwaway film. But what really lets it down more than anything is just that it really sucks in the middle, and it's really dry, and it feels like it's going nowhere. During that section where he's on the planet and he's, you know, been taken in by the colony, and you know he's learning how to garden and reintegrate with society, and I know it's supposed to have this kind of dramatic heft to it, and you're supposed to be, and it is, you know, and it's supposed to be looking into these issues of PTSD and stuff like that, but it's so ham-fistedly written that you're just like, I don't really care. You know, like if you were doing this effectively, you know, that there's a story to tell there. And obviously PTSD is a very serious yes. issue. And, you know, one that, you know, has a lot of thematic meat to it, none of which Soldier really digs into. And, it's just one of those movies, because that section is so ham-fistedly done and any kind of serious beats in it are just feel like nothing. You're just like, just give me the action. Like, when you're giving the action, like, it's entertaining. Just do that. And also, the romance with Connie Nielsen is just like, ugh.
Yeah, especially since most of the romance takes place while her husband, who she's happily married with, is still alive.
It kind of bothers me that as well, because again, you know, from that there's from that like initial like glance of Connie Nielsen seeing him in the bed from, you know, being taken in injured, and it's clearly one of those very cinematic kind of love at first sight moments, and you're like, yeah. But then she's married, and then you just kind of like, so you've got this other character who's just kind of been marked for death, you know, and you know straight away that, oh, his, you know, his time is running out, you know, which you get. So again, you don't really care about that character, because you're like, well, he's going to die soon. I don't know when he's going to die, but he's going to die soon, because we got to get to this romance.
Yeah.
But yeah, as we discussed, it's not a terrible movie. It is a movie that is still watchable, and yes, I'd certainly take it over some of the worst entries in the Seagal season and the Stallone season. Yes. So it's certainly far from the worst movie we've covered, but it is the worst movie we've covered this. Okay. So, I mean, this is all speeding by very quickly because we just keep damn agreeing on things.
Which I know this next one we will too, probably.
Yeah, no, it feels like a fairly safe bet, but it could be a surprise.
Yeah.
Go on then, Craig. Hit me up with your best Kurt Russell film of the 1990s.
I'll go with Stargate.
What? Oh, I didn't see that coming at all.
The one that I'm going to choose is, I've given it away. I went in again to this season completely sure that, in the way I went in with Stallone going, okay, well, it's going to be Copland because I've seen all these for the most part, except the ones that really stop where my mom will shoot, which could never have been a contender. So I went into this one like, it's going to be Tombstone. Get all the way to the end and see Breakdown. Like, oh, well, no, it's not Tombstone. It is Breakdown, purely because I think kind of from beginning to end, it is, it runs greatly. It's well-structured script. Kurt Russell is incredible in it, as we've already kind of talked about. And yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I'm going to get the Blu-ray when it comes out. Or, well, it will be out by the time of this recording.
Yes. But as we discussed on the Breakdown episode, it will be the Paramount Presents Blu-ray. Again, we're not sponsored by Paramount, but when this episode goes out, that will have already been out for about a week. It came out on the 21st of September, and this episode will go out it'll be out for a couple of weeks. So that'll be that. So it will be available if you want to pick it up, and I probably will too. And again, not sponsored by Paramount, but if they did want to sponsor us, get in touch.
I currently, my partner and I just got Paramount Plus, so you know, Paramount, if you want to just even cover my Paramount Plus subscription, that's fine too. Yeah, whatever, but no pressure.
good times, just trying to hawk ourselves to Paramount. See, like, normally I would be against selling out. I wouldn't sell out with my other podcast, my horror podcast, which was very proud of its independence. Yes. And covering indie horror, you know, it's very punk rock, the horror podcast, but action podcast, I will sell the fuck out. Does it, you know, because action movies, yeah.
I agree.
Anyway, yes. Well, you'll be unsurprised to learn, given our conversations, that Breakdown is also my best film. And again, I'm not just being paid by Paramount to say that. It really is. I think it is excellent from beginning to end, and I really, the kind of byword of this season has been consistency. Like, in that, maybe not all the movies have been amazing, but they've been consistently good, and most of them actually haven't been amazing. Most of them are kind of three-star kind of films that are just kind of entertaining. They're not going to rock your world, but they're not going to, you know, you're not going to get upset by the end of the movie that you're like, you or feel like you've wasted your time. They're just solid good movies. And you know, Stargate is a solid good movie. Executive Decision is a solid good movie. Backdraft is a solid good movie, if somewhat insane. With, you know, we went through that in the episode, you weren't on that, Craig, but Caleb and I went through it on the episode of the insanity of some parts of that, but they're all kind of solidly entertaining good movies. And I was thinking about Breakdown, and it is better than a solid good movie, but I think possibly that it's consistently, pound for pound, the best movie we've covered. Now, there is other movies that I would say are higher in my favorites, and there is movies like Copland and Ronin that I think have higher peaks. Yes. But in terms of just being consistently great, I think it's the most consistently good movie we've covered.
I would actually agree with that because, yeah, I think, as you just said, Copland has some amazing peaks. And if you listened to that episode, you would know I absolutely love Copland. But there are points, script, where you can tell that stuff was cut or in the editing room or in the kind of just the editing the script itself that it doesn't really make up for. There's a lot of loose elements. And then same with Ronin, there's kind of some muddiness within that too that kind of drags it down a little bit. But this is just like a well-functioning film throughout.
Yeah. And it was kind of hard to do an episode on actually in the end because of that exact thing of like everything just functions as it should. Like, and as we discussed in the episode, like if you were to make a main criticism, the main criticism would be it's kind of a little bit in the shadow of some of the movies. It kind of feels like it's not quite as good as the Vanishing or Deliverance or you know, like or maybe even Joe, you know, like, but again, it's still very, very good.
Yes.
And, you know, from the performances to the stunts, to, the, you know, like the, you know, be that in fights or be that in, you know, car chases, the action sequences are done really well. The suspenseful bits are, you know, are really tense and are done really well. Everything just works.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, you know, other than it being maybe falling short of some of the movies you might compare it to, and the fact that, like, the wife character that's played by Kathleen Quinlan is not really there as a character, you know, like, it's a bit of a nothing character. You get a little bit of her personality. But, you know, again, as we discussed on that episode, it's just like, I can kind of understand the choice of her being like kind of sidelined, you know, in terms of increasing the tension and increasing the knot in your stomach of like, is the character alive or dead? We don't know, you know, like, everything about it maybe doesn't reach some of the majestic high points that, the likes of Ronin or Copland do, but, and it doesn't have a kind of singular kind of blow away moment of the most top tier iconic action films, but it just keeps on delivering, and it's super tight and it speeds by and you are on the edge of your seat from the very, very beginning. Like, you know, the breakdown in the, you know, like the first kind of major incident in the movie of like, you know, him nearly crashing into the MC Gainey's character's the car happens like 3 minutes in of like, you know, like that character Errol like drives out and he has to swerve and then they have that confrontation at the garage and stuff like that. And you're like only 5 minutes in the movie and you're already kind of gripped. And it does not let go of that grip at all until the end credits. And then you get that, you know, amazing kind of moment of just them hugging and, you know, there's no music and, you know, cuts the credit and still no music. And you're just like, and, you know, that pause is the pause for the knots in your stomach to come loose.
Yeah. I think. Like you as the audience are finally able to breathe with them. Like,
exactly. Oh,
yeah. But I will say it does make for a harder to do episode because all our other episodes, we always have a little fun with like some of the flaw moments or whatever it may be. And that one, there was never a moment like that.
No, that's absolutely true. There was a lot of time we just didn't know what to, you know, like say in terms of like, yeah, having fun with some of the flaws, you know, and, you know, as we discussed in our, like our Ronin episode and our Copland episode, like there's, those movies have lots of loose plot threads and like the plots of those films are overly convoluted and overstuffed, and you know we talked about all that, and even yeah, like Tombstone, which is probably both of our runner-up in this season. Yes. Again, you know, between some of the issues with the villains and some of the issues with the tone of the film and how the ERPs are presented and how it kind of tries to put the ERPs and the Clantons on like a kind of equal footing of like, who's really the bad guys here? But then it's already been established that, yeah, the Clantons are the Mert's worst guys. Like, don't try and act now that they're on some sort of equal footing, like, and the Clantons have had this injustice done against them at the OK Corral. Like, you know, if you're going to do that, you should have seeded it better at the start of the movie. You know, so it was fun to have with that. But yeah, Breakdown, it was just like, well, it was gripping, it was suspenseful, everybody played their role really well, the stunts were great, yep, good times, well done, Jonathan Mostow.
Yeah.
So, that's it, that's just covered, yeah. Kurt Russell. Is there any final thoughts that you want to give on this season?
No, not that I can think, no, you kind of covered all of it, this kind of being the strongest season being, yeah. And I've already talked, about it in that sense. This one, I was kind of happy to watch each episode, even at its worst, which wasn't that bad as we've already discussed, but yeah, that's really all I have to say on it.
Yeah. I'm kind of the same. I think we've covered everything. I think I've said all that I want to see on the films that we covered. I've said all that want to see on Kurt Russell in the 90s, and yeah, it's been a great time. I've really enjoyed this, and I've really enjoyed doing the research and finding out like what a nice guy that Kurt Russell seems to be, and what a team player that he seems to be on set, which cannot be said for others. And yeah, it's just been a fun season. We should just wrap this up then, and tell people where you're at on social media, and you know, where they can find Bloodhound Picks and all that usual stuff that you give.
Sure, yeah. You can find me on Twitter or Instagram. I think Twitter is Craig Dram, Drahem, and Instagram is craig.dram. And then I also do the other podcast, Bloodhound Picks, where we focus on kind of older, we highlight older and obscure and independent horror films. And then we also do a little side segment where I'll do interviews with members of the independent horror community, from bloggers to filmmakers to scholars to whatever else it may be within that community, and kind of talk about what it is like being a part of it and finding work and doing all of that in this modern era, especially currently with the pandemic. And so that is just Bloodhound Picks, PIX, and you can find that on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, or there's even the website Bloodhound Picks.
And if you want to check my other podcast out, New Horror Express, where I talk to indie horror directors, actors, and novelists, etc., you can do that. We also do a monthly Guilty Pleasure horror episode, where we cover a movie, much like we cover movies in this podcast, where we look at them, you know, kind of not quite scene by scene, but you know, cover the plot, you know, and we do that monthly. And you can check all of that out on newhorrorexpress.com, or you can hit that up on Twitter at newhorrorexp. I'm also on Facebook with that. If you want to hit me up personally, I'm also on Twitter and Facebook. My Twitter handle is at scottmurphy85. And you can contact this show itself on Twitter at 90s_all. And yeah, I think that's everything covered, isn't it, Craig?
Yep. And then the reviews, if you.
Oh yes. If you would like to leave us a review, you can check us out on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and other places you listen to podcasts. And if you be so kind, please do leave us a review, and please do make those reviews 5 stars, because otherwise it upsets the podcast algorithm gods, and you would not want that on your conscience. So that's that. End of season. Well, not quite end of season, because we will be covering one more film, where as normal we do a bonus film episode, which is not starring the star that we've covered in this season, but is somehow connected to this the films we've covered in this season, the star we've covered in the season. And that film will be this season, Disney's Three Musketeers. And you will find out the connections to the Kurt Russell films when that episode comes out next week. But that is all for now. Until next week, see ya.